From Washington, D.C., you are listening to Rule of Law Albania with Albi Cela.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Rule of Law Albania. I am your host, Albi Cela, and in this episode, my guest is Erdoğan Şipoli, a thinker, a writer, a critic, and above all, a good citizen. Erdoğan is a doctor of philosophy in political sciences and international relations, and he is currently a visiting scholar at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. He is the author of numerous articles and two books. His academic focus is in foreign policy, democracy, the rule of law, religion, security, and conflict resolution. Today with Erdoğan, we are going to discuss on the rise of demagoguery around the world, and in particular in Albania, but also Kosovo. The history, the culture, and the politics of Albania and Kosovo are so intertwined, and that is why we deem it necessary to include them both in the discussion. They both suffer from the same symptoms. We have leaders who came in power through promises, which they are not able to deliver, and they have been staying there ever since. But how can we change that? Of course, we don't have a magic formula which will make it happen within the night, but we hope that through this podcast, we can shed some light in that direction. Erdoğan, thank you for joining me tonight on this fourth episode of Rule of Law Albania.
Thank you very much for having me, Albi. It's always a pleasure to discuss things that matter with you.
So before we move to Albania, but also Kosovo, at a certain degree, mainly just to show the similarities that they have in common with regard to their leaders and politicians, let's talk a little about how and why demagogues come to power. So, which keeps repeating itself, or should we blame the opponents of these demagogues and the opposition parties in those countries where they come into power? So let's say, should we blame Corbyn for Johnson or Hillary for Trump? And we have Modi in India, Bolsonaro in Brazil, the Philippines, Poland, Hungary, Turkey, and the list goes on. So are we dealing with individual failures here, or is there a bigger picture?
So today we are going to talk a little bit more about demagogues than about populists, as far as I understand and our prior conversation. So before we start that, I just want to say this. The picture in the world is not as dark as it seems. We always had demagogues and we always had populists in the world. And this is not something that we should be, hopeless of, you know, this is the age of demagogues and stuff like that. I'm saying this because a lot of people go into hopelessness, whereas it is not a hopeless situation. We can get out of it. We just need to work and be smarter. So there was this quote that I was reading the other day, and it said that people that want prosperity should know how to get organized as well or better than those who have brought the world in the place that we are today, or for example than those in the countries that have brought these countries to the place that we are today. So going back to your question, because today we will be talking a lot about populism and stuff, so I just didn't want your listeners to go into hopelessness. So if we go back to your question, yes, so right now we are dealing with, especially the countries that you mentioned, there is a rise of populism, there is a rise of these demagogues. But remember, Albi, that nothing happens just by itself. There is a whole system that feeds at each other. What is happening today in Turkey is a history of some people being oppressed and then those people coming to power and oppressing others. What is happening in Albania, what is happening in Kosovo, is not something that is happening only these last 10 years. It's something that has a history out of that bears a history in that. And unfortunately, these are things that demagogues use. For example, let's say the communist past of Albania has constructed the leadership that we have today. So of course the opposition is has some blame, if we can call it so, for where we are today, because the opposition might not be as well organized as the demagogues that have won elections. That's first. The second thing is, don't forget that a lot of these populist leaders, or even like populist, a lot of these populist leaders, they came out of governments that were led by most of these opposition. So, for example, we have known Hillary and her policies. We have known her during the Clinton administration. We have known her as the Secretary of State. So it's not out of nowhere that she can promise something that, you know, people don't know about her. Or like, for example, let's say in Albania, you have the same people doing politics for years. In Kosovo, take Kosovo for example. You have the same people that do politics, that form governments together. And then for the last 20 years, which is since Kosovo went out of war, right? So now, of course, there are some nuances that they put people inside. And today I was just thinking, because they're going to form a new government, I was like, no, at this pace that Kosovo is going, every Kosovo citizen is going to be a minister one day. Because there are so many governments being formed that, you know, somebody may just be, okay, good, when is my turn to be a minister?
I understand. But so do you believe that we have to deal with demagogues in Kosovo and also in Albania?
Definitely. What I'm most worried about is, until now, we didn't have personality cult leaders. So we had leaders that we voted for. We had leaders that, you know, people campaigned for and everything. But at the end of the day, it was like, hey, you know, when they were doing something weird, it was like, hey, you know, what's going on? Why did this politician do something? And people were questioning it, all right? Now there are two things that worry me. The current political elite, when I say political elite, I mean the opposition and the opposition in both countries. They are in politics for so long that they have taken over most of these countries' employment opportunities. And if you are not part of either position or opposition, you cannot find a job. So now, as it was in Macedonia, you have to be part of a party. So when that party comes to power, you get a job. And then when one party stays for too long in the government, they employ so many people from different families. And you have to also consider that the political culture, yeah, in Albania and in Kosovo is very clan-based. So they...
Yeah, family, yeah, ties.
So they have... they have employed people from each family that if they don't vote for that government in the next elections, they know that they are going to use their job. So of course they are going to vote for that party. But nevertheless, we have seen a lot of changes from time to time. Now there are also some personality cult leaders. Like, for example, what is happening with the political parties and political leaders in Albania. People just believe that these are the great people, and if the other one comes, like for example, if the Democratic Party comes in Albania, people will be poor, there will be no prosperity, and Edi Rama is the best, is like a saint that came to Albania. Or
it is something that we discussed in the first episode.
Yeah.
of my podcast. Like, we have that culture of myth. We like to make our leaders as myth. Like, it all goes back into our history with Skanderbeg, etc., etc. Like, we like to make our leaders look great. Like, they are the only ones that can help us move forward.
But I'm differing between that, what you said, which is very true, that myth, okay, because we need a leader to bring us prosperity. We cannot do it. That leader needs to do it for us. What I'm seeing right now is also because we all always wanted to see that leader, okay, but we didn't believe that we could find it. This is why in Albania it was an easy change between parties who were going to lead. There, even in Kosovo, it was like, yeah, all of them are bad, so let's try this one now. Whereas now, we see that myth that people act like they found that leader to lead us. They found the next Skanderbeg. Until now, people were not able to say. I don't think that people were saying we have found the next Skanderbeg. Now people started believing it. That is the same what's happening in Kosovo. Now, what is happening in Kosovo is this. People, the supporters of Hashim Thaçi, believe that Hashim Thaçi is the George Washington of Kosovo, which, and it's like, it's the biggest insult that you can make to George Washington. And then there are others that believe that Albin Kurti is going to solve the whole all problems that Kosovo has. Right? Moreover, with the recent government breakdown that happened in Kosovo, they just made Albin Kurti a bigger cult leader.
Stronger.
A bigger political, personality cult leader. At the same time, don't forget that it also made Hashim Thaçi a bigger personality cult leader. Why? Because now people, if you follow his supporters, they say that he is the one that could take action. So he's
the one that could step up at the
and be there at the right time because this is what it is needed. When you need to step up, you need to be a man, bur, to step up. So if you remember our conversation last time we saw each other live, that was before the quarantine. I mean, we are in quarantine for what, 2-3 years now, so it sounds for so long. But we talked about populists and about rule of law. So as your podcast is about rule of law in Albania,
and just to make it clear why I wanted to involve Kosovo so much is that our politics is so intertwined, and the thing is that we share the same culture. I mean, we are the same people, same culture, but also because lately we have seen also politicians from Kosovo enter Albanian politics. We have ministers and deputy ministers, which are Kosovo nationals that are into our politics in Albania. So that's why I thought that it would be important also to include Kosovo in this conversation, just to make it clear for the listeners.
And I think that if we're going to talk about populism, we cannot oversee this intertwine of politics of Kosovo and Albania. Because remember that Hashim Thaçi and Edi Rama, they constantly struggle, or they are in that constant conflict about who is going to affect the Albanians in Preševa and Bujanovac. So there is this exactly. Idea that Edi Rama wants to bring Albanians together. And then there is this idea that Thaçi is, I'm the leader of the Albanians. And of course, Ved Vendosje, who today is heading the Kosovo government, has a branch in Albania, a political party in Albania, that they want to do politics in Albania. At the same time, they claim one of their manifesto points is that we should have a unified Albania. So I think that it was wise to discuss these two together.
Yeah, but I ask you whether we are dealing with demagogues in Albania and Kosovo, because in my opinion, someone can tell if we are dealing with a demagogue or not, at least not in the beginning. So with Trump and Johnson, it was clear from the beginning, like Trump campaigned with hate speech and stuff, Johnson by attacking the EU, Brexit, etc. So in their case, it was clear. But when it comes to Albania and Kosovo, it's somehow different. Like every politician in Albania and Kosovo presents itself as an idealist at first, like protecting democracy and everything. So as someone who has a magic wand and that can make miracles happen. And unfortunately, we believe them. So how can we identify them in Kosovo and Albania? How can we identify these demagogues?
So I think Mark Twain said that politicians are like diapers. You need to change them often for the same reason. So basically, I think that is what needs to be done. Everyone, when they stay in power for that much, everyone will be a demagogue, because that is what sells, Albi. So now imagine something. Let's start from Kosovo. Do you think from the Kosovo leaders outside of Albin Kurti has ever read a book about democracy?
Well, to be honest, I don't think any of them
Definitely.
Has ever read.
So, another thing, if...
Maybe Shpenda Meti, but I'm not sure.
But he's not right now running for the government, right? He's a mayor. So now, another thing, if today they leave politics, what is the job that they can do? Nothing. Can they go?
Pretty much nothing. Yeah.
Can they go to think tanks? Can they produce policy papers? No. So they have to stay in power to survive, because they don't know. They are professional politicians. They are professional leaders, right?
Actually, now that I think it, you're right, because there's a few politicians, few former prime ministers or deputies, MPs in Albania at least, that from being politicians, like entered academia or
stuff. Now,
I can't tell.
So now, Edi Rama is a painter. Do you think that he can go back to painting? Do you think that he will be able to sell those paintings as much as he has been selling them right now?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure, but I think not.
So basically, this has become a profession for them. All right? So at the beginning, they might come there as, you know, people who want to bring prosperity and everything like that, which, you know, right now, that doesn't stand for any politician, because they have been there and we have seen all of them. They have been there for too long. But then everybody, after a certain point of time, they become demagogues, because they have to say what people want to hear, including Albin Kurti. Okay, Albin Kurti is an idealist, and as you know, is not something that I think Kosovo or Albania needs right now, because my thought is that we don't need idealists, because we are too small of countries, and we should build as many allies as possible to work together with them and move forward. But what we need is rule of law. We need technocrats that will be bounded to the rule of law for 4 to 8 years and then go back to where they came from. Because power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, for example, let's take an example, something that you know I know even more than any other country, is Turkey, right? People are like, hey, Erdogan, you know, previously you were supporting the things that Recep Tayyip Erdogan did, so now why are you talking so much against him and stuff like that? And I always say, I didn't support Recep Tayyip Erdogan I supported the things that his government did, which is European Union, rule of law, and everything else. But because I am bound to, myself, I support values instead of people. Now, when those people lose those values or they don't follow those values anymore, then I am comfortable in saying, hey, now they are wrong and now I'm going to speak against them. So I, a very prominent, very smart, extremely a great mentor of mine, an ex-ambassador, a U.S. ambassador, and a great negotiator, asked me, and he said, you know, like, what's up with this guy, with Erdogan? You know, he was doing well and everything, so why did he decide to go all rogue? And he said, look, ambassador, when you were at the when you were an ambassador, you had your cars, your drivers, you had a good, you were living in a good house, and you had your security detail, you had your yes man with you. And he said yes. So I said, now you are driving a normal car like me, don't you miss all those things? He said, no, I don't miss them. Because now I have time for my grandchildren. Now I have time for my family. I have time to read. I do other things and I teach at the university. And I said, so this is why people become demagogues and then they're like, I either stay in power or I go rogue. It's because first they miss all those goodies that came with power. And because that is what they live for. They don't live for bringing a new generation of people and all those kind of things. They live for to have yes men near to them. And the second is they cannot go back to doing something else because they have been this is the only thing that they've been doing in their life. Politics, coming into government and going out of government. So what are they going to do afterwards? This is why in places like in Kosovo and Albania, we don't have youngsters into politics. We have youngsters that go into party politics, but not young leaders. And that is even boring. Youngsters who are well educated still go and do politics under the old guard, under those people that, you know, were always there.
Yes, and this brings me to the next point. So we have these demagogues, but we don't have other alternatives. That's why we keep them. That's my understanding, and that's my concern. It's like we don't have much alternatives when it comes to choose other leaders. And to be honest, I share the same opinion with most of my fellow Albanians and Kosovars. Like, we have a government that doesn't care about the opposition, actually plays around with it, if you have noticed lately, and an opposition that has no power whatsoever. So people in Albania and Kosovo don't like their current governments, but at the same time, they don't have faith in the opposition. So how do we deal with this situation? I know, again, it's a question that raises questions, like it makes it seem hopeless, but how can we deal with this?
If I knew the ultimate answer to this, most probably I would win a prize, if not a peace prize, especially now, if not a peace prize, then, you know, at least a kind of prize. As a political scientist, I must say this. First, we need to work more on developing the political culture of our people and educate them politically rather than developing just their political involvement. As you well know, in Albania and in Kosovo, everybody knows about politics. Because that's the bread and butter of every discussion, all right? So that was not happening in America, and now it is also happening in America. But unfortunately, it's happening with a burden, and that is everybody being involved, which is a good thing in the first sight, but then the political culture is not being developed. So I believe that Kosovars and Albanians need to be politically developed better, and this will take some more time. For example, I think that the world is not only about governments or political parties that are in government and opposition. We should have more think tanks that do studies about what's going on. We should have more writers, analysts that are not in the pocket of one party or another party. Look, Albi, I was in Kosovo civil society since the year 2000, and every friend of mine today is either a member of a party or a member of another party. Civil society in Kosovo, and as well as civil society in Albania, is considered as a stepping stone for political power. Studying
yes.
in America or in Europe or somewhere abroad is considered a stepping stone for going back to Albania or to Kosovo and enter into politics. So we should get rid of this. Why this is true? There is true because of one, we want more power. Everybody, all of us want power, and okay, I'm gonna go in Kosovo and I'm gonna be a minister, I'm gonna be an MP, I'm gonna be this, I'm gonna have power. The second thing is we believe that the change comes from politics. I'm going to enter into politics and I'm gonna change things from inside. That never happens. Because
especially in Albania and Kosovo.
Look at Turkey. Look, even in America, it's becoming like that. The most important thing in America are the institutions. So because they keep those institutions and I don't have to be a member of a political party to be able to be part of that institution, that is what kept America sane until now. But they should not lose this. If we go back to Albania and to Kosovo. Now, Albi, if you don't do this podcast, but you have meetings with your ambassador constantly, you have meetings, you go on Twitter and talk only about what's going on and all those kind of things. And then if you go back to Albania and enter into that political circle again, then who is going to make the change? Remember, politics, I don't believe that politics is bad, by the way. I've always said.
Yeah, that is something that people need to know, that politics is not bad. Like real politics, like politics with
so
values.
So the thing is, look, I'm so happy that I studied political science. I love politics. This is why I consider politics not a science. I consider politics as an art, because I love how politics can change stuff, right? But you must also remember that politics is also a Leviathan. All right? So if you fight with the Leviathan, in its own den, that is going to eat you sooner or later. So we should have institutions that can initiate this change, that can educate people about the political future. We should have institutions that, despite who is in the government, things will continue to progress the way they. Now imagine in Switzerland a couple of years ago. In Canada a couple of years ago, doctors. There was a bill that was going to be passed, and doctors voted that they don't want their income to raise because they already get enough income. So this is that kind of that kind of political culture, or that kind of culture about people that I'm talking about. In Switzerland, people voted against decrease of taxes because they said this is how the government is taking care of our healthcare, how the government is taking care of our roads and stuff like that. So, and they know that not everything is bounded to politics. We always look for Skanderbeg in politics, all right? What I'm saying is let's teach people that next Skanderbeg maybe will not come out of politics. Next Skanderbeg will be someone that will, a doctor or
a doctor, maybe.
An Albanian Elon Musk, for God's sake, somebody that innovates something. Somebody that innovates something. So I was here now I'm a consultant also for some IT companies. So, you know, there are companies that we have never heard of, but that they have a higher turnaround than the whole yearly budget of Kosovo and Albania together. So
we believe that
people, we need people to know that, hey, not everything is bounded to politics. Yes, we should vote, yet we should be care. And this way, then those demagogues, because they are demagogues, remember? Those demagogues will start talking about things that matter. Right now, demagogues talk about things like, we are the chosen people of the world, we are this, we are that, we are, we don't need anybody to let us, to tell us what to do. We can do without Europe, we can do without America, or no, we are the most pro-American people in the world. What does the most pro-American people in the world mean, man? I mean, are you kidding me? So why? Because this is what people want to hear. So this is the way, yeah, this is why
they
want to talk about that. If people want to hear about innovation, then these opposition and position will be forced to talk about innovation and to talk about economic prosperity, or to talk about, for me, the most pressing thing in Kosovo right now, for example, the most pressing thing is visa liberation. Everybody keeps talking about that, nobody delivers, and people don't punish those people that don't deliver it. People need to be free. Students, Kosovo and Albania are countries with maybe the highest level of in percentage of youngsters that go abroad, while we, I believe, I don't think there is an official like statistics or study made about this, but I believe we are countries that has the least educated leaders, and those well-educated people elect those leaders.
Actually, yes. In Albania, yes. I don't know about Kosovo, but in Albania, there was, let's say, not a study, but there was a TV show that put forward all like the names of those MPs that didn't have a proper education, or they have like falsified like, their diplomas and stuff. And less than 15% of the parliament actually were elected people that had a decent education. And that is very concerning.
Look, for example, and you know, like when we say decent education, I'm not talking only about having PhDs and stuff like that, because a lot of people have PhDs right now in Kosovo. Okay, just one of the ministers that was proposed in the new government of Kosovo today, he has 19 academic articles written in a year. Is that possible? Come on, you are doing graduate studies.
I don't think so.
I don't have 19 articles, although I wrote two books, and I don't have like 19 academic articles written in my 10-year, 12-year of academic life. So it's all because, you know, that looks good. This looks good. But there is no substance there. And people need to understand that the way how we can go out of this is have substance. Establish institutions that are going to tell the truth to the people. Media in Kosovo and in Albania are in the hands of either position or the opposition. And, you know, position, opposition, they change so much that, you know, they all sometimes become an opposition and sometimes become a position. Think tanks or civil society is in their hands. So we need these institutions. We need more podcasts. We need YouTube channels. We need scholarly articles. We need journalists that don't want to be into politics. At the same time, we need politicians that want to serve for 4 years and then go back to where they came from, either from academia or from... But we don't need politicians that after college, they went directly into politics. Because where are they going to go back? There is no way they can go back, right? And I know I speak too much, so please stop me when you need to stop me.
No, it's fine. You're totally right with regard to that. But the thing is that Albanians and Kosovars, they don't understand that that's how democracy dies. When the media is corrupted, when everything is corrupted, people don't understand that's the way how democracy dies. And recently I read a book of Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt. They're both professors at Harvard University, How Democracies Die. And it's a book that I recommend at least to all youngsters in Albania and Kosovo. So he says that the degradation of democracy at first is imperceptible, but the erosion takes place piecemeal in baby steps. So do you think that there is a degradation of democracy in Albania and Kosovo? And if yes, how far have these baby steps gone?
To have a degradation of democracy, you need to have a certain amount of democracy, right?
That's another issue. That's another question.
No.
Do we have democracy, actually? Do Albania and Kosovo have democracy?
We were taking steps to develop our democracy, our democracies.
Because if you hear people in Albania, at least, like in daily language, they're like, we're 30 years into democracy, we're 3 decades into democracy. It's like, right after communism, we became a democratic country. That's our perception, that communism fell.
So that is, I believe, in my opinion, and I'm happy to be and I'm happy to be wrong, but it seems to me that people don't understand that there is a transition to democracy. Just going outside of communism does not qualify you as a democracy, right? This is why you have the developing countries, the developing democracies. There is a transition of democracy, but this is very philosophical. Because part of my PhD dissertation was about the promotion of democracy. So I can talk about democracy from Aristotle and until today, which is not very helpful. All right, me as an academic, I need to find some better ways to explain what is going on right now. So let me just. Suffice to say this about democracy, I don't believe that any of these countries have had democracy. They were transitioning towards democracy with the help of a lot of allies and with the help of a lot of people, all right? But I don't believe that, you know, we were transitioning into democracy. Nevertheless, what I believe is that transition has stopped. And we are starting to backslide. Because if you have media in control of position or the opposition, if you have... at the same time, remember that democracy is really, really... bounded to economic progress, whereas we can see that both in Kosovo and in Albania that economic progress has not been there for many years now. At the same time, those people that are in power, they were able to get more of the wealth than everyone else. And that is not what democracy is. So we don't deal with the world of politics, or politics is not only about, are we communist? Are we fascist? Are we a democratic country? There are so many other nuances in between. There is elective authoritarianism. This elective authoritarianism is what has happened in Turkey up until 2015. Erdogan did not at once become an authoritarian. There was elective authoritarianism from at least 2008 to 2015. So then there is something called kleptocracy. There is something called...
When you say elective authoritarianism. Are you saying that, look, everything works perfectly, there are elections, the media is free partially, etc.?
So I don't elective authoritarianism that, is the when there are elections, but there are free and fair elections, but the leaders are authoritarian. That means that there is free and fair elections, but they control the media. All right, there is free and fair election, but there is a corruption, and although everything passes through the parliament, there is one person, that authoritarian leader, that tells to those people what to pass. So now you cannot say that, oh, you know, there is no free and there is no elections. This is why I said until 2015, because since 2015, there is no free and fair elections in Turkey anymore. So, but until then, again, there was one man or one group that took all the decisions, and although they were elections. So I believe that is one of the things that might be happening in our countries, which one thing that we are transitioning into, but I don't think that there is still authoritarian, elective authoritarian in Kosovo or Albania. What I wanted to say is that there are other types of governments. It's not only authoritarian or democracy. There is elective authoritarianism, or exactly.
Because there are other shapes.
There is kleptocracy. There is I don't know if there is something also called kakistocracy. So which means being run by the least qualified. So I mean for me, it's really more about that.
I think that fits us better. I think this kakistocracy fits Albania and Kosovo in the perfect way. So Erdogan, lastly, before we wrap this up, so the world is going crazy right now. We have this COVID pandemic situation around, but will this situation affect both Albania and Kosovo in terms of rule of law and democracy? I guess both of us are here in Washington, D.C., but I guess you have seen what is happening in Albania, but also in Kosovo, like the measures that the governments are taking. Do you think that they will affect the situation?
So that's a very interesting question. I'm not a big fan of predictions and saying especially conspiracy theories. I'm a bigger fan of taking things one at a time. So these times are very challenging, and to tell the truth, I believe that both Albania and Kosovo good measures to try and stop the pandemic.
Of course. So
just because Albin Kurti or Edi Rama took these precautions, I cannot say that, oh yeah, just because they took it, they are going to use it in their advantage. They are going to shut the free speech or the media and stuff like that. All right. So let's take first things first. Right now, people are struggling with a real threat, a very big threat, and I think that they should continue doing the best, what is the best for the public health. But at the same time, it's important that these measures have a limit, that they cannot continue after the pandemic is done. Unfortunately, for example, look, when social media came out and it became more popular, people were like, oh, social media are a bastion, they are a pillar of democracy and stuff like that. Remember that if me and you can use social media for good, for, to for information. At the same time, demagogues will be able to use social media for ill, for their own purposes. So if this pandemic, unfortunately, could be used for ill gains, for more authoritarian, drive of populist leaders and governments, is it happening? I think there are so many indications about that. Like, I really don't like, I would appreciate Edirama being more concerned with fighting the pandemic and you know, defending the public health rather than going and talking ill to people, you know, entering into needless debates or even tweeting or Facebooking about stuff, all right, which he has been talking.
Well, that is one thing that worried us a lot. Like, you had governments in Western countries that there were 24 hours of the 7 days of the week, they were out there in their offices working and everything. And our leaders in Kosovo, yeah, and in Albania, they were all the time in Facebook, in live streams, talking to the people.
So that is, you know, that is a point of concern for me. Bringing down a government in Kosovo during a time of pandemic, that is very concerning. But remember, it's also concerning because then they are also constructing some bigger militant supporters of the opposition. There, you know, this is a higher polarization time. Or, you see, that this friction is not helping that political culture or political education that we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, remember? Because this friction is, yeah, all is ongoing. So that is more what I, that is why I'm worried. We have to see, but we have to remain very, very vigilant. To be able to remain very vigilant, we have to do some things. First, I think increase the education of the people, educate people more about politics and be like, have some more objective institutions. Second is get out and get and bring people out of that idea that everything can be solved through politics. Break down that idea that the government or the state is sacred. People are more important than the government, than the state, than everything else. All right, and also change politicians very often. Now, because your podcast is about rule of law in Albania, and let's just say Albanian lands. So, you know, from our personal interactions, how devoted or how important rule of law is for me. So I just believe that now we need more people that are bounded to the rule of law instead of to ideas and ideals that we are going to rule the world. Albanians have been trained with this idea that we are going to rule the world, and they have never ruled the world. We have never ruled the world as Albanians, never. So right now, imagine this, Albi, if the world comes together and says, okay, Albania or Kosovo, or Albania and Kosovo together, okay, you rule the world. What are we going to do? Are we trained to rule the world? Do you believe yourself to rule the world? That is not what it's right now. It's more profitable right now. It's more idealistic to run, let's say, SpaceX, or to run Mercedes as a company, rather than run the politics of the world. When we have this kind of mindset shift, things will get better. Such as, people in New Zealand, people in Sweden, people in Norway, people in Finland, they don't know and they don't care who is their vice minister of finance or vice minister of agriculture. In our countries, we know all the deputy ministers, we know all the vice presidents, we know what their kids did, what their kids do. Why? Because they all are corrupted. Their kids are corrupted. They are all in our daily life. And we as people, we don't have this mindset that, hey, we pay them to do a job. That is, deal with the finances of the country. And if they don't do their job correctly, we can fire them and hire someone else. Exactly.
Exactly. That's what the rule of law is.
So instead of
being held accountable, that's what we need to learn.
For me, my leader,
our leaders accountable
would be, ideally, would be rule of law instead of an idealist. Me that Kosovo is gonna rule the world one day. I don't even want to rule the world as Kosovo. Let's have rule of law. Let's have a good life, a prosperous life where people can travel freely, when people can go to study whatever they like abroad, where people in the country. Yes, we can
express,
have discussions
can
that matter.
Freely.
Every year there are the same discussions. So I hope that next podcast,
we
can make a next podcast about what is the future of nanotechnology in Albania, or what is the future of artificial intelligence in Kosovo, the development of artificial intelligence.
That would be the perfect scenario.
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah,
so.
let's hope that will happen someday. Erdoğan, thank you.
Well,
for
thank
being
you very much for having me.
I really appreciate it.
I know
it.
We've
thank
gone
you.
over the time, but the discussion was so interesting and so good with you that I really enjoyed.
Thank you, Erdoğan. Thank you.